Lane bench. There's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. Happy Friday and the Christmas break is officially over. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Well, it's Steinberg and Vickers along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about Jonathan Huberdeau over the last few weeks. And for the first time in his Flames career, like, this has been an extended stretch of us talking positively about the way Jonathan Huberdeau is playing. And I don't even say that to be funny.
No, and I know you're not, and it was so rude of me, but, like, you're
but
absolutely
it's the truth.
Right.
Like, when we've talked ad nauseum about Huberdeau, it's been about his struggles. It's been about him passing on clear looks to the net in overtime. It's about giveaways. It's about his salary. It's about the frustration, what he's on pace for, all that type of stuff. Well, right now, I don't think there's any doubt that he's in his best stretch as a member of the Flames. He has 13 points in his last 10 games, dating back to November 30th. And if you take that game on November 30th out of it, he still has 11 points in 9 December games, which is quite the juxtaposition from last year when he had 1 point in 13 December games and was pointless for the first 12 in the month. He didn't get his final point. Exactly. It was New Year's Eve when he finally scored his first point or recorded his first point in the month of December. This year, at worst, he is going to have 11 times more points in December he had in December of last year.
Okay, I'm going to hit you with one more. Just since we're doing this. Last December, December 2023, you mentioned one assist in 13 games. That was tied for 544th in NHL scoring last December.
In the month of December?
In the month of December. This December, 37th. That's a 500 spot jump.
It's a pretty big jump.
That's a little bit different than last time.
We all agree he's playing much better, right?
Yes. Like yes.
It's not just like, oh, things
not
are...
Not even just the point.
Yeah, and it's not even like, oh, things are just going in for him and he's getting lucky. And no, it's not. Like, he is playing a much better and consistent brand of hockey and I think a much different brand of hockey, right? Like, I do think we're talking about a guy who has changed his game a little bit, changed his game is maybe a little bit too cliche. What I like to say is he's changed his approach. Okay. And I think that, and that's just personally my preferred nomenclature. I really do think he has changed his approach in terms of the way he thinks about generating offense and the way he thinks about just overall what he's doing on the ice, right? Like, I think he's generating offense in different ways. He's not relying on the same ways that made him a very prolific point scorer as a member of the Florida Panthers. He's adapted, and it's taken some time, but he's adapted his game, his approach to the way the Flames are playing. And I think that he has changed. I think that he's just overall changed his mindset, right? And there's been more of a commitment to the overall game, the 200-foot game. And so let me ask you this just point blank. It doesn't have to be a long answer, and then we can get into it more after hearing from him. But this is without question his best stretch as a member of the Flames, right?
Yes.
Is there any debate?
Without question.
Okay. But Mr. Huberdeau took it a step further after practice on Friday. Everything looked the same, by the way. D pairings, forwards, all looked the same at practice Friday. It was a fully attended practice ahead of their game Saturday in San Jose. And you know, we brought Jonathan out. I asked him this question. I was not expecting an answer, you know, quite like this from number 10.
Jonathan, on the outside, a lot of people will say, like, this is the best run that you've had since joining the Flames. But do you feel that way? Like, do you feel the last number of weeks is the most comfortable that you felt as a Flame?
Yeah, I would say. I think I'm, you know, like I said, the more complete players. I think it's You know, I feel like I'm at my best, I think, ever, I would say. Like, you know, especially on the other side of the puck. So never really been the best at that. And I think right now I'm better, and I take pride in it. And I think it just all around my game's been good. But, you know, there's a lot of season left, and just keep going. I think I'm having way more fun, and it's fun to help the team win some games.
I think I'm at my best ever, which I was not expecting. I was expecting to hear, yeah, this is, you know, the best stretch I've had. There's more to come. But this is the best version of myself ever, is what you heard from Jonathan on Friday morning. The work he's doing away from the puck. He's being played in all situations. He's being played a ton. Like, his ice time has been through the roof over the last 3, 4, 5 weeks. And he's producing. So you've got all that type of stuff. And on the other end, he's putting up points and doing it at a point per game pace over a decently extended stretch of time. Could this actually be the case? Is it the best version of Jonathan Huberdeau? He feels so, and that he remembers having 115 points in his final year with Florida. He has turned into a more complete player. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I would say that the way he's playing, in terms of the style of game he's playing, and he mentioned 200-foot game, is the most conducive to consistent winning in his career. And yes, he did have 115 points, and when you're producing at that clip, that is very much conducive to winning. But it's not necessarily conducive to winning tight checking 2-1 type games. So I can understand where Huberto's coming from when he says that. And if that's how he's feeling, and the result is he's on pace for his highest goal total in his NHL career. He's on pace for 31 goals right now. He's hit 30 twice, of course, both with Florida, once in 21-22 and once in 18-19. But the fact that you're getting a player that is on pace for an NHL career high, and again, with the caveat that there's still some season left to be played, but you're getting the highest goal total projected out of a player that's north of 30 now. He's 31 years old, while playing, from his perspective, the best 200-foot game he's played in the NHL. Yeah, that's a massive step for Jonathan Huberdeau, a player that we've talked about for two seasons coming into this year, about what are realistic expectations. What has he got to give the Calgary Flames after a 55-point season and a 52-point season? Well, he's on pace for north of 60 now. Not that significant a jump, but when you're talking about seasons of 15 goals, 12 goals, and now projected 31 goals, that's a massive step in the right direction, especially considering it's not coming at the expense of everything offensive blue line back.
Is it the best version ever?
I don't know. I mean, like, when you score 115 points in a season.
I just find it fascinating he said that, though.
When you have an NHL record 85 assists from a left wing a few seasons ago, I would probably argue that's the best.
And yet, feels like this is, right? And I find that really interesting. And maybe it's because he feels like he's impacting the game in all situations or in all areas more than he was in Florida. I mean, putting up 115 points, you're making a pretty large impact on a team that won the President's Trophy that year. But maybe you feel like because you can be played in a penalty-killing role, because you don't have to be sheltered as much necessarily when it comes to the opposition you're playing, or because the coaching staff has the trust to throw you out there in last minutes of games, all those types of things. I mean, maybe that is the feel. Maybe the guy feels like he is impacting the game more than he has at any point in his career, and that's why he feels this is the best version of himself. I found that fascinating that he answered the question the way he did, and I was talking to Danny Austin about this down at the Dome following all the media, and Danny's writing a story on Jonathan today. And he had to step out of the scrum to talk to somebody else for a little bit, came back in, missed that quote. So I sent him the audio afterwards, and he said, like, I was waiting for him to, like, backtrack on it. I was waiting for him to, like, say something to undercut what he just said, and he didn't do it. And I think there is a pretty firm belief that this is the best version, pretty firm belief from Jonathan himself, that this is the best version he's been. And whether or not you agree on the outside is kind of immaterial. Whether or not Pat and Aaron agree doesn't really matter. The fact that he believes that, I think it's a pretty powerful thing.
Well, the fact that we're seeing him play the best hockey he has in 2.5 seasons in this city, if that's personally how he's feel, and the results are you're playing your best hockey you have in 3 years, absolutely keep feeling that way, because you're actually physically seeing the tangible results. Again, 31 goals he's on pace for. This is a guy that's the pass first guy. This is a guy that's the playmaker. This isn't the guy that scores goals. But the fact that he's, again, lots of work to do to get there, but the fact that he's trending that way is not insignificant. Like, he's got 13 goals this year. He had 12 in 81 games last year. So we talk about...
He has more goals than assists.
Yeah, which I can quickly look. I don't think he's ever done in his career.
No, no, guaranteed.
At any level, not just the NHL level. That's bonkers, and that's starting to be...
Most he ever had in St. John was 43 goals, which is a good number. It's not
a great number.
But still had 62 assists.
Yeah. So the fact that you're getting, I don't want to say the most out of Jonathan Huberdeau, certainly the most you've ever seen as a member of the Flames, but if he's feeling like this is the best version of Huberdeau, let him feel it, because it's working.
100%. By the way, the closest he ever did was that lockout shortened season in 2012-13. 14 goals, 17 assists was as close as it's come to this, where he's got 13 goals and 12 assists. He's never finished a year in the NHL or Major Junior with more goals than assists, which is kind of an interesting side note to the whole thing. You know, and I thought, you know, it wasn't just that quote that we played from Jonathan. You know, he had some other interesting things to say after practice, because I followed up. Like, he talked about how this is the best version ever of myself, and a big part of that is because this is the best I've ever been away from the puck. So I asked him, what does that take to improve your play away from the puck?
I just learned, you know, to be on the, when you're on the other side, I think you're in a better position to go offensively. So I think breaking up plays, and obviously the other guys are not in good position, so you could take advantage of that. And, you know, I think tracking back and stuff, and I think it's the identity of our team. You know, a lot of guys, you know, we reload hard and we're a hard team to play against, and after that we get more chance to go offensively.
When you talk about being a new version of yourself, like, you've been playing this game for a long time, and people can find that difficult to evolve their game when they've found success doing other things. That's something you must take a lot of pride in, the work you've been able to put in to become that new version of yourself. Right?
Yeah, because you never know. I mean, I never thought I would have to change my game, or, you know, when you're playing, you're having success, and you never think you're going to have a down and or a down year. But I think it's going to help me along the way, and that's what I take pride in. I think when I get older, you get a little slower, and I think that's when it's going to come back, that you can play both sides of the ice. That's what's going to help me when I get older.
I don't know. I've only gotten faster. I don't know what you're talking about.
I've gotten significantly slower, if anybody's curious.
Especially my brain. Like, my on-the-fly math just keeps getting better.
Was your on-the-fly math ever any good? I say that respectfully, of course.
This is all sarcasm, Vic. It's all keep up, bud. Keep
just
up.
Just checking. I was also being slightly sarcastic there, but that's all right.
I give the guy a lot of credit, because I don't think, and I'll read some texts in a little bit. A couple of good texts have come in on this conversation as well, but, you know, I don't know if this is the best version of Jonathan Huberdeau we've ever seen. I don't know, but he believes it, and he clearly takes a lot of pride in the brand of hockey that he's playing, and how much better he's gotten away from the puck, how much better his 200-foot game has gotten. Like, he takes pride in this, and he believes that's really rounded him out as a player. And Ryan Huska spoke about it after practice as well, and he was asked about, you know, the commitment that Jonathan's made to becoming a more well-rounded player, and what that says about him.
I think it says a lot about him. I think it shows you what type of a teammate he is, where team takes priority over self in a lot of different ways, and I appreciate that greatly in his approach to his game this year and in the last few years. Like, he's been really good, especially behind closed doors for us.
To that point, he also just said, I never thought I'd have to change my game. And yet, maybe some of the best complete players had to, right? I always think of Steve Yzerman or others who always had to kind of change it a bit. And he's also taken a step there.
Yzerman's the guy that I would, as a young guy, you always heard the stories of Scotty Bowman and talking to him about, you know, a little bit less offense, maybe a little bit more 200 foot. And he became one of the best players of all time. And Hubie, hey, we all know the type of offense he can still put up, and the thing that excites me is we're still seeing that right now from him. But it is important now the other side of the game as well, and I think that's the mark of a guy that you want to be leading your group, and he's been consistent with it, so I'm happy with him for sure.
And honestly, and this is not to contradict or to push back on the coach, but this is the first time he's ever produced like this as a member of the Flames for a stretch like this. So it's not even like him trying to be the old guy who was putting up a ton of points but was skirting it defensively. He wasn't putting up a lot of points and also was struggling elsewhere. And again, I'm not going to sit here and say that Jonathan Huberdeau is going to be a Selke Trophy front runner. I still don't think the defensive side of his game is his biggest strength, but I do think he's made a concerted effort in trying to improve it. I don't think we're going to be talking about him as the modern day Steve Yzerman by any means. And that's not what I'm trying to suggest. But what I think's important is that he has made some more than subtle adjustments to his approach on the ice. And it's translating to more offense and to offense that we haven't seen since the trade. And so I think that further underlines just how important his mindset and approach change and commitment to becoming a little more well-rounded. I think it just shows you how important it really is.
Well, and the thing that I find most encouraging in the goal-scoring aspect for Huberto isn't so much the, okay, well, he's got 13 this year. He only had 12 total last year. It's the way he's going about generating the offense that's different for me this year, whereas in the past two seasons, he's been very much in east-west. He's been gaining the zone and hope that there's a seam that opens up. And if it doesn't, honestly, there were too many times where he tried to find it anyway. Whereas now he's going more to the net. He's going more north-south as opposed to the east-west. And if you look at where the majority of his goals have been scored, they're within 8 to 10 feet of the blue paint, if not inside the blue paint. And the old adage is, where do you score goals? You go to the net. You haven't scored in a while? Go to the net. That's where you get bounces. That's where you get rebounds. That's where you get tips and deflections. And yeah, 13 goals in 34 games. He's shooting 21.7%. Like, that's tough to sustain over a full season. But at the same time, the closer you are to the net, typically the higher your shooting percentage is. So as long as he keeps doing what he's doing and feeling the way he's feeling, I'm curious to see how long he can ride this stretch. If it's just a stretch, whether it's something that's going to be sustainable over an even larger amount of games. But you have to tip your cap because Jonathan Huberto is, as he says, and as we've observed, is playing his best hockey as a member of the Flames right now.
That is without
indisputable.
Debate. You know, can you dispute whether this is the best version of himself? Sure, we can. I mean, we can't dispute what he thinks. He believes this is, and so that's the most important thing. But on the outside, you don't necessarily have to agree, but I don't think anybody can disagree that the last month of Jonathan Huberto is the best he's ever played as a member of the Flames. And I'll say this before I hit the text line. I am beyond happy for him because, and I hope he can keep it going. I hope that this is something that we're still talking about in February and March because he has been accountable the entire time. And I will push back on anyone who says that he hasn't been, or that he's been lazy, or that he's checked out, or he doesn't care, or doesn't want to be here, because I have felt the entire way that is an unfair and BS
narrative.
Narrative and classification of the situation. Frustrated, yes. Confused as hell, absolutely. Wondering why it's not working, frustrated, all those things, yes. But checked out, not caring, doesn't want to be here. That's not who the guy is. And he has been accountable the entire time. He has come out after bad games. He has come out when games have been spoiled because of a mistake he's made. He's come out after horrible stretches offensively, and he's faced the music like last December. He's been self-deprecating. He's been accountable more, all of those things. And you talk to anybody inside that room, he is a leader. I mean, Ryan Huska raved about those things. Kind of the stuff that we can't see, he talked a lot about after practice. And you talk to Mackenzie Weegar or Michael Backlund or Jacob Pelche or Connor Zare, like, yeah, this guy has really turned into a leader on that team. It's why whenever you hear Craig Conroy or Ryan Huska or Michael Backlund talk about kind of the core six guys, Huberdeau is always one of them because he is. And he wears a letter, not because he makes $10.5 million. He wears a letter because he's a really important veteran at 31 years old inside that room. And I think there's a lot of lead by example in terms of what he's done this year. I give him a lot of credit. I really do.
Well,
and I'm happy for him.
Well, and for the first time in his tenure of the Flames, he's leading on the ice, too. He literally leads them in goals and points. So there
also
you go.
True. Few texts, 96960. This says, Pat, would you say that narrative is bunk? Yes, I might even say it is bunk and chicken bleep, if you will. Give me 2 seconds here. See if I can find it in enough time. Oh, here we are. It's a little too loud. Just give me 2 seconds,
I can't wait. This is a new clip for me.
But I think that is bunk, and I think that is such chicken bleep.
Oh, edgy.
I was really expecting an actual bleep there, and for you to just say the word bleep, that is, oh, day made.
Edgy. That's all edgy Steinberg
got some
right
edge.
There. Yeah, a guy's got some edge. Yep. This text says, I've been following Huberdeau since the beginning of his career, and I agree with him that this is the best version of himself. That comes from Paul in Brentwood. And this says, Jonathan's got confidence in his new style of game, even if that statement may not be objectively true. He's not trying to be the guy he was in Florida anymore, which is the most important thing, in my opinion, at 960, 960. So yeah, whether or not this is the best version of Jonathan Huberdeau or not, that's you can debate on the outside. What you can't debate is two things. Number one, he believes this is the best version of himself. And number two, this is the best we've ever seen him as a member of the Calgary Flames. It is the most extended positive narrative that he's had since coming here to Calgary. And I hope it continues because he's heard some of the...
It'd be impossible not to.
He's heard some of the chicken bleep out there. Like and it's not just the criticism. Like, some of the things that people have said a little over the top, like this is a disgrace and this guy is an abomination on the Flames. He makes me sick to be a Calgary Flames fan. Like, that stuff is so over the top and was never fair, but he's heard it and he knows that that's been out there. So I'm happy for him and I hope it continues. See what he can do for the final three games of December. He's already got 11 points in 9 December games. There are 12 games to go, 12 games to be played in the month of December. What can he end up at? He's already, as I said, at least 11 times more than he put up last December.
So rude. And 100% accurate.
It's not even trying to be rude when I say it.
I know.
Vix and Steinberg coming at you this hour on Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Happy Friday. It's Steinberg and Vix as we continue along on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. And it is time for our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers, and now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday. And probably just the one topic for us, and if we have time for a second one, we'll get into it, but the first topic's kind of the meat of our Daily Flames Roundtable, because, Willsy, we were talking about this after the pre-Christmas game, the final pre-Christmas game on Saturday, the big win over Chicago, 6-4 final score. Yeah, it got a little hairy there at the end, but okay, happens. They win the game. They get the 2 points. They salvage-ish the homestand, and they go into their longest break ever at Christmas with a winning feel, and they finish off the homestand with a win. And one of the things you were talking about was the amount of teams last season that went into the Christmas break in a playoff spot and how many of those teams made the playoffs. Now, because the Flames didn't play the final two games before the NHL's Christmas break, they did get passed, and so they will come out of the Christmas break at least a point out of a playoff spot, if not two, depending on the way things go on Friday night. So knowing all of that, right now there are 8 teams ahead of Calgary when it comes to a playoff spot in the Western Conference. Of those 8, who has the best chance of being permanently tracked down by the Flames?
Well, it's an interesting question because you have to consider how many games these teams have played and kind of where they're at. So when I look at who's directly ahead of the Flames, they're only 1 point behind the Stars for the second wild card spot in the Western Conference, but the Stars have a game in hand. And you know, for me, they're a team that doesn't really have any big holes. And if there's one thing they probably want to add, it's a Chris Tanev type, and I suspect they'll probably try to add that type of player between now and the trade deadline. So I'd scratch them off the list. The Canucks, a more talented team than the Flames, a more experienced team than the Flames, but a team that seems to have some internal turmoil right now with the whole JT Miller, Elias Pettersson situation. Can Thatcher Demko stay healthy? I wouldn't predict the Flames would catch the Canucks, but I also don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility with them having played the same number of games and being just 2 points back. You look at the Central Division and the top three teams there. I mean, the Jets got off to such a great start. I can't see the Flames catching them. You know, the Wild are a team that, you know, they don't blow your socks off. They've got a world-class player in Kirill Kaprizov, but, you know, outside of that, they're not one of those star-studded teams, but they're 7 points ahead of the Flames with just one more game played, so it'd be kind of tough to track them down. The Avalanche are a team I do wonder about, and I almost second-guess myself saying that because they've got some of the best players in the world, and Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, but they're a really top-heavy team to me. And now, the goaltending, it's been solidified to some extent, but that's still a bit of a question mark for me. So I'd be surprised if the Flames caught the Avalanche, but not completely blown away if that were to happen. But again, that's something I would bet my mortgage on. You look at the Pacific Division. The Golden Knights, again, they've got a 10-point lead, same number of games played. I don't think that's going to happen. The Oilers are 5 points ahead, but the same number of games played. Again, I think the Oilers are a little further along as a team, and they've got generational players that the Flames simply don't. And then I would say, last but not least, and the most likely team the Flames could catch is the Kings. So they're 4 points behind them, same number of games played. They've got some head-to-heads coming up, and the Kings, for me, are a team that's good but not great. So if you can win those head-to-head games, then I think the Kings probably, for me, are the most likely team right now.
Yeah, I agree. When looking at this question and scaling the roster in the West, or not the roster, the standings in the Western Conference, first of all, I read the question and went, Dallas Stars, what? And the fact that I did not see the Dallas Stars being the second wild card coming out of the Christmas break, but that's just where they happen to be with the Colorado Avalanche playing a few more games and surging of late. So yeah, you can scratch Dallas right off this list. And to me, it comes down to the Vancouver Canucks and the Los Angeles Kings, two Pacific Division opponents. And the fact that Vancouver is where they are, going largely without Demko through this part of the season, just recently come back and have kept their head above water. If Demko can stay healthy, then I take them off the list. If Demko continues to have injury concerns, then they're right back on this. But for me, it's the Kings. And in large part, it's because, yes, they've gotten better goaltending this year than I think anticipated. For me, it comes down to whether or not Darcy Kuemper can continue to play the way that he has with the Kings. I think he was unexpectedly been really strong for Los Angeles. I don't think I had a 9-11 save percentage. I think that's roughly what he's at. 9-11 save percentage, 2.40 goals against average. Just 16 starts. He's had a little bit of injury trouble himself as well, and Dan Vladar has done well to hold the fort there. But I think there are a lot more questions up and down from top to bottom the Kings lineup than there are the Canucks. So I'll say that they're sort of the easiest to catch permanently.
You know, the guys, I think the team that I would usually look at would be the Kings. And I'm still not a believer in the LA Kings overall. I look at the Kings, I'm like, what the hell are they trying to do there? You know, they traded away all that for Pierre-Luc Dubois, and then took a massive L on that and ended up trading him straight up for Kuemper, which, you know, I think has been addition by addition because they've got a goalie, and it's also addition by subtraction because they got rid of Dubois. And, you know, Dubois seems to be a better fit in Washington than he was at any point in Los Angeles. But I look at them and some of their metrics, guys, they actually are pretty with... I look at some of the 5-on-5 metrics. I don't love them long term. I don't think they're going to be a Stanley Cup contender at any point, but I do think they're a good enough team to be in the playoffs in the Western Conference, which is kind of like they're turning into the old Minnesota Wild, where you're like, yeah, good enough to maybe get in and get bounced in the first or second round, but that's about it. But the team for me is Vancouver, guys, and maybe I'm biased on it. Maybe I am swayed by the Vancouver market, of which I've got a lot of friends in, and I also have a lot of people that I follow on social media. Guys, they hate that team. The Vancouver market is like, they hate it. And it's not just the Pettersson-Miller stuff, which is so Vancouver. Like, that is so Canucks that there is a story like that. Where else? What other market does that come from? Not Toronto, not Montreal. That is a Vancouver-only market story, and yet it's turned into a massive story. Like, it's just, I look at that, and I look at the fact that we don't know if Demko's going to stay healthy. I look at the fact that Elias Pettersson is a shadow of his former self, and JT Miller's been gone from the team, and they look like a very vulnerable group right now. And with two more head-to-heads against them, both at the Scotiabank Saddledome, and a team that seems to be meandering at best and seemingly on this powder keg that could blow up and send them the complete opposite direction. I don't know, guys. I am not, again, the 5-on-5 metrics, not super sexy. The goaltending question marks, their elite players, or at least one of their elite players, not playing anywhere near up to snuff. Guys, if it's me, I understand why you both win LA, but not just to be different. I really think Vancouver's the group that I'd be, if I'm a fan in any of these markets, Vancouver's the group that I'd be less confident in, or least confident in, that is currently sitting in a playoff spot.
Yeah, something does seem broken there. There's no doubt about it. And I've got huge question marks about their goaltending. You know, can Thatcher Demko finally stay healthy? I think time will tell, but I wouldn't feel overly confident about it, the way the last couple of years have gone for him. And then the whole Miller-Pettersson thing is just bizarre. I mean, you're talking about two of the biggest three stars on that team outside of Quinn Hughes, and you've got a young captain in Hughes who I'm sure has tried to intervene and get everybody on the same page, but you've got a veteran guy in Miller who seems to be pretty set in his ways in the way he plays the game and the way he carries himself. So I'm not sure if he's going to give an inch. And then you've got Pettersson, who just hasn't looked like himself this season. And if Elias Pettersson isn't the guy who we've seen really since he came into the league, then the Canucks, for me, aren't as good a team. I mean, it sounds obvious to say that. They've got a lot of talent on that team, but you know, he is quite often the straw that stirs the drink defensively, along with Quinn Hughes. So, yeah, the Canucks, I could certainly see them having one of those seasons where you know, things just didn't work out and they missed. I could certainly see it happening with the Kings as well, as I don't think they're as talented as the Canucks, but they play probably a more consistent brand of hockey. And then the other one for me, and again, I catch myself even saying this, but I do wonder about the Avalanche fellas. Yeah. And I know that they've got two of the best players on the planet, but don't you think they're awfully top heavy?
Yeah, I don't love their depth per se. Their just top end is a really, really strong top end for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now that they have figured out their goaltending and completely overhauled it, they just signed Mackenzie Blackwood to an extension.
5 years.
On this Friday, a 5-year extension. I think they're gonna make it. Like, I think they'll be okay. They might have to go in as a lower seed than maybe some of us expected, but I think they'll be okay. I'm not going to sit here and say 100% they're going to be okay. Like, things are too tight to be that certain. But I think I've got a little more confidence in them than both LA and Vancouver, if I'm being honest. And partly because they fixed their goaltending and partly because they have the top-end talent they do. You know, it's funny. Guys, I look at the – and the last thing I'll throw into this conversation, which I think is kind of interesting – if you go take a look at Money Puck, and Money Puck's the one that I like to track the most just because of all the different things they take into account when it comes to their playoff odds. So right now the Flames are 10th in the Western Conference when it comes to their playoff odds at 36.2%. In order, the teams, so the teams behind them, the only other relevant team behind them is St. Louis, because Seattle's pretty far out, Nashville's pretty far out. But St. Louis is behind them at 12.3%. But here's the order of teams in front of the Flames in ascending order that Money Puck has in terms of making the playoffs. So currently, guys, they believe that they kind of side with me. They've got Vancouver ninth at 56%, Minnesota eighth at 56.4%. But here's the interesting one. They've got Utah seventh at a 68.3% chance to make the playoffs. There's something that model really likes about the Utah Hockey Club. You know, they are the number five team in terms of 5-on-5 possession. They do have some really nice players there. They've got a plus 10 goal differential. They maybe haven't gotten the scoring all the time, but they've gotten some solid goaltending. The model really really likes Utah. And that would be the last thing I throw into this conversation is that where does the Utah Hockey Club factor into this with the Flames? Because those two teams are about even in the standings right now. They're only 1 point apart with both having 16 wins through 34 games. I guess we kind of have to factor in Utah in this conversation too.
I guess. But for me, and I know they are in a new city, and I know they have a new owner, and those things are important, especially the second one, but prove it. I mean, the Coyotes have been a team, or were a team for a long time, that you looked at their roster and saw all this young talent and thought, okay, is this the season they finally take a step? No. And then they move, and they've got a new owner who is investing in the team as an owner should. So I do think that they'll eventually figure it out, but until I actually see it, with my own two eyes, I'm just not going to believe it with that group of players. So we'll see. The other team for me, and it's interesting, Pat, when you went through those odds, would be the Wild. Now, the Wild to me almost seem like they're stuck in the murky middle, like the Flames were for a long time, like a team that will finish eighth or ninth in the Western Conference. So I'm not saying that I think they're going to fall out of the playoff race, but when I look at the rosters of all the teams that are ahead of the Flames or just behind the Flames, you know, I like their roster. I don't love their roster. They've got one super elite player in Kirill Kaprizov. They've got a bunch of other good players, but you know, I think the Flames could certainly compete with them in a best-of-seven series if you kind of look at it that way. So, you know, there are a number of teams, but first and foremost, the Flames have to take care of their business. A good home team in the first half, not good enough on the road. We heard that from coaches and players before the team traveled today. So unless the Flames play well above 500 hockey in the final 50-plus or 49 games of the season, then it's not going to matter what these other teams do. I think they have the ability to do it, but they've got to take care of their own business first and then hope some teams around them fall off a little bit.
Yeah, I still think the Kings are the easiest to catch. I get the argument for Vancouver. I quite like Minnesota, so for me, I'll remove them from the situation. Not to make this a Money Puck segment, but did you see where the Kings are? 91.2%. The Kings, 91.2%.
A big thing that they take into account is some of the 5-on-5 metrics, expected goals, possession, all that type of stuff. And, you know, certain people feel different ways about some of those metrics and strength of schedule, all that type of stuff. It's a pretty complicated model that Money Puck puts into their playoff odds.
Yep.
And so they really like the Kings. They really like Utah. They love Vegas at 99%, right? Like there's some teams that they really, really like, and they don't love some of the other teams. Like the fact that Vancouver's down at 56% and Utah's up at 68%, gives you a pretty good idea of what their model seems to favor. So again, by no means is that ironclad. I find it interesting to see how some of these different models look at teams, what the standings look like. It's going to be a really interesting kind of second half-ish of this season. The Western Conference doesn't look like it's going to be one that is decided very soon. It looks like this might come right down to the wire.
And that's fun, right? I mean, I don't think a lot of people would have predicted the Flames would be just 1 point out of a playoff spot at the Christmas break. So the team had a good first 30-plus games of the season. Let's see if they can keep on rolling here. And interesting little tidbit, as the Golden Knights check out of the hotel in San Jose, we're checking into it. So they're right now getting on their team buses to head over to SAP Center where they're going to play the Sharks tonight. Flames play the Sharks tomorrow night and then head to Vegas to play the Golden Knights on Sunday. So it's a busy spot here, San Jose, with one team leaving and one team coming in.
Okay, Willsy, be well, and we will talk to you Saturday on game day.
Sounds good. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thanks for being flexible. That's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. As we start to wrap things up this hour, big topic on this hour was Jonathan Huberdeau, and is this the best version of himself that we've seen? He certainly believes that. That was a big chunk of the first half of this hour. Then the Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Cam Hughes and Shan Vergy have been our producers this hour. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.
This is Flames Talk.
And that will start to wrap us up this hour. We'll be available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcast very shortly. Should I go one more time or no? Yeah, should I?
If ever you're wondering you should do something and I start laughing before you do it, it means yes.
This is the new Dustin Wolf megaphone that I got for Christmas. So it's also got other animals, but there's nobody named John Eagle on the Flames. There's no Steve Panther. So I think it only really works for Dustin Wolf. Oh, there's Billy Panther over there. Yeah, it wouldn't work the same way. All right.
Let's get down to business here. That was a heavy sigh.
Hey. I'm just happy to be back. It's good to be back. We got games on Saturday, Sunday, so you have content all throughout the weekend. Puck drop 8 o'clock Saturday for the Flames against Macklin Celebrini and the Sharks. Puck drop 6 o'clock for Calgary's Oh, now Shan's onto it. 6 o'clock puck drop for the Flames in Vegas on Sunday. And then we're back with a regular day of Flames Talk on Monday. So have yourself a wonderful rest of your weekend. And don't forget, it is a Friday.
Friday night. I'm thinking that we just might fly away to someplace they don't know who we are. Now I'm riding shotgun in your car. We drive through the city like explorers going 65. Blowing hair flying across your face. We left on Friday, Woo! Now it's Saturday. Pressing buttoned up, jeans iron slipping up. Red shoes walking slow, headphones flaring three stacks. Sunglasses flaring out, big watch hanging low. Studded belt pulled taut, three stacks on the radio. Friday night, I'm thinking that we just might run away to some place. We can be who we are. We can be who we are.
I love you, Mom.
Okay, have a good weekend, everybody.
Okay, bye.
For Aaron Vickers, for Shan Vergy, for Cam Hughes.